babysitter has arrived. So everything's under control, we hope. We're the Bolins, and we're from Portland area, Gladstone in particular. My name is Doug, and this is Emily. My profession and whatever you want to call it, avocation, is as a solar consultant or a solar engineer for a utility, the utility that serves Portland, which is Portland General Electric Company. There are two of us full-time solar consultants there, so it's a company, surprisingly, and there's some tensions there, but they invest some money in helping people use solar energy. And so I help customers do their solar things, whatever they might have in mind, and make suggestions, etc. Say a word about you.
Well, I don't know. I mostly got interested in solar energy because of being married to Doug here. But I'm a medical technologist and have a scientific background also, so this was interesting to me as well.
She can explain our solar heating system in our home as well as any mechanical engineer could anyway. So, but going back to where we come from in terms of energy, it's a moral issue with us in terms of justice and in terms of limited resources, concern for the earth, and the idea that there are limited resources. Up until this time, our world has been working off of a savings account, which has been oil and fossil fuels, primarily the last 30 or 40 years. And as some of you are aware, when the savings account runs out, you've got to work off your income. And really, the only energy income that we have is really solar energy that is constantly arriving and that we can use in real. I don't know, I look at the energy shortages that we're all experiencing, and so many people call them shortages of energy, and I like to translate shortages into the phrase that if there are energy shortages, it's because we're using too much, and not because there's not enough. We're using more than what the economic order is willing to provide, or if there's actual resource limitation. So an energy shortage means we're using too much in our way of looking at it. Another thing is that in terms of limited resources, we do have control over what we use. Working for a utility company, I see a lot of things, people complaining about high bills, and you know, a utility really does try and struggle to keep the rates as low as possible. They have different ways of looking at things than individuals do, of course. But it boils down to the person really has control over his own energy use. He can use other things for his energy use other than buying them from the utility. And so part of our approach is to show people they are not helpless. They don't have to buy energy from the utility. And so it's, you know, they feel like they've lost control, but they really haven't. When we get into some solar options. The National Council of Churches recently issued a report on energy and ethics, and many theologians, lay people were involved with this report. And it came down to, when making energy choices, we have three primary criteria for making an energy choice of a source of energy. And these three things are sustainability, equity, and participation. Sustainability, you want to choose an energy source that is going to be around, that's going to continue to provide energy, and that's hopefully not going to run out. So why should we invest our money and our resources now in energy sources that we know are not sustainable? We can't keep up the rate of use of, for instance, of fossil fuels that we're doing right now. Just can't keep that up. And eventually it's going to lead to serious problems, and already is leading to problems. In terms of equity, you know, is the energy accessible to everyone? Is it something that's rationed out on the basis of who can afford to pay the most for it? Being a social issue or a moral issue, the idea of equity in having energy accessible to people is another criteria. One of the problems is that when we, America, starts buying oil, continues to buy oil, we bid up the prices of oil all the way around the world. There's a global impact. And that means that we make people that really need that oil have to pay beyond what they can afford to pay for it because we use too much. So again, the issue of equity. The third one, criteria for making an energy choice, is participation. Will that energy choice allow the individual to participate in making the decision? As it is now, I think by default we let the utility companies and we let the government make the decisions for us. And of course that would lead into making decisions for ourselves. I think if we had more participation in our energy choices, we'd eliminate this problem of what I call scapegoatism. And what that is that we tend to blame others for our own excesses in many cases. Gasoline. Everybody's looking for a scapegoat. Is it OPEC? Is it the government? Is it ourselves using too much? The utility company gets blamed for high utility bills. And because people have been used to low utility bills, and this is somewhat controversial, of course, but people can do something about those bills. So the idea is, let's not find a scapegoat. Let's try and look at ourselves. When you point to someone else, you have three fingers pointing towards yourself. And that's really the basis of the problem of energy, especially in America, is that we use too much, not that there's not enough. So it's a change in thinking, a change in approach for a lot of people. Well, these three criteria, sustainability, equity, and participation, just focus right on solar energy, in our opinion. And it's sustainable, certainly as long as man is going to be on the earth. It's at least available to all people in terms of equity. In fact, those poorer nations usually are centered around the equator and have more of an access to solar energy. And participation, because it is can be a decentralized form of energy use, we can all participate in those decisions. We can name our price, so to speak, for solar energy. Of course, it depends on what approach we use. We can spend a lot for solar energy, or we can spend a little, all of which will get us some solar energy. So these point to, okay, how can we use solar energy ourselves? How can we get down and be part of the solution rather than part of the problem, which we continue in our ways of using energy now, especially in our homes, businesses, then we're all part of the problem. And so Emily would like to take and discuss how we've kind of taken a look at solving on an individual basis how we can solve that problem.
Okay, well, you didn't really talk too much about stewardship, but I think that as responsible stewards of the Earth's resources, it's really imperative that we use less of the world's resources on an individual level. In this country, we have 6% of the world's population, but we use one-third of the total world's energy resources. You know, and that obviously there's a discrepancy there. And what can we do about that? Let's bring it down another step lower. Let's bring it down to our homes. On the residential level, 80% of our energy goes into heating. Heating the air around us, heating our hot water, and only 20% goes to other uses, your stove and refrigerator and, you know, electric clothes dryer and for all your small appliances. So this was the figure that really caught me. 80% of the residential use is for heating. And that is precisely what solar energy can do for you, is provide the heat. In our case, it provides two-thirds of our heating requirement. And so if you take two-thirds times this 80% figure, we have been able to reduce by one half our total household energy use just by using solar energy.
This is in Portland, Oregon.
It's in Portland, Oregon, you know, where we get 35 inches of rain a year.
And lots of clouds.
Another idea is the idea of appropriate technology. And not trying to make the energy more complicated than what it needs to be. I mean, why get energy to heat your house from electricity that has been generated at a nuclear plant when all you need is heat? You know, that nuclear plant is wasting 2/3 of the heat that it's producing. 2/3 of that right. goes up the cooling stack. That's really, I don't think, a very good use of, responsible use of electricity to use it for heating, if that's the way it's being generated. You know, solar energy comes to us in the form of heat, and you apply it toward your heating needs. You know, that's just a direct,
straightforward conversion process.
You know, it's no, it's more efficient that way. Okay, and then I wanted to talk a little bit about what makes a solar house. When we were, 5 years ago, we were in the process of building our home, and we had spent quite a few months looking at ready-built homes, and then we finally made the decision to build because we couldn't find anything that met our criteria. But what makes a solar house is, first of all, one that has minimized its heat loss. In other words, it has good insulation, it has double pane windows. If we were building again, we would put in twice as much insulation as what we did 5 years ago. 5 years ago, we were exceeding what was code, you know. And now code in Oregon calls for an R30 insulation in the ceiling, which is, you know, 10 inches of fiberglass batting, which is considerable insulation. And so you want to conserve as much, well, make your needs as small as possible by insulating as tightly as possible. Another way to do that is by minimizing the surface area of the house. Every exterior wall and roof is where you're going to lose the energy. So if you have a one-story ranch-style house spread out over a large area, that has a lot of surface area, but you can get the same amount of square feet and lose less heat, you know, if you put it in a cube shape. Mm-hmm. But our house is pretty close to being a cube shape. So, you know, and that's also cheaper to build too for the square footage.
It uses less material.
So minimum surface area is important. The style of the home is really insignificant. Mostly when you think of a solar home, you think of something ultra-modern or, you know, very contemporary. But that doesn't necessarily have to be. It could be a log cabin, a Holden chalet, or a Midwestern farmhouse, you know, or a adobe house in the Southwest. The style isn't what makes it a solar home. If you want to utilize what they call passive solar heating, letting the house itself absorb the heat and store it just within the structure itself, orientation of the building to the sun becomes very important. Most builders today orient the house to the street, you know.
They face the major window areas, you know,
and
towards the street.
They'll put most of the windows towards the street, regardless of whether that's the north side or the west side or whatever. But we have to, you know, change our consciousness level here and start thinking of orienting our houses toward the sun, and put most of the windows on the south side of the house and as few as possible on the north side of the house. Windows become very important. Calculated overhangs become important depending on your latitude. You know, most architects or engineers around, you know, could figure out for you how large of an overhang you need to have in order to shade those south windows in the summertime, but allow the wintertime sun to come in when you need the heat and to warm the house. Also, landscaping becomes important. You're going to want to plant your shade trees on the west side of the house so that you'll need less air conditioning in the summertime, and you'll want to put your deciduous trees on the south side of the house so that you'll have shade there in the summertime, but they'll lose their leaves in the wintertime and let the sun come in those windows. You know, all these considerations. And these are all things that you can, you know, if you are in the process of building a house or thinking about building a house, if you take, you can just take these things into consideration. It doesn't cost anything extra in the building process. It's just in how you think it through and how you lay it out and orient your home.
We've gone so far backwards in home design and home orientation and layout that any little advance like just planting trees, deciduous trees on the south side, is some great find, you know, it's some great breakthrough in solar heating or something. But we see we've gone so far backwards, and I would just want to add something here. If we were to take our house, the standard split entry house, I don't know what's standard for the areas that you live in, but and take the major window areas and just turn the house around and face it south, usually about a 10 to 15% savings in fuel bills will result just from that. And that's a no extra cost option if you think about it beforehand. Obviously, if you're going to do it, you've got it on the lot, you've got some problems there.
Okay, and then what most people think of what makes a solar house, if we're going to make a definition, is these fancy collectors and equipment on the roof and that sort of thing. But that, you know, if you do it, if you have good insulation and minimized your heat loss and have your house oriented properly, you may not even need, you know, you won't need nearly as many of these collectors on the roof. And that's what makes the heating system expensive, is these collectors. Okay, well then, I was going to talk a little bit in how we got involved with our house. As I was mentioning, 5 years ago we were under construction. We had found a lot. We really, at the time, hadn't thought that we were going to, building a solar house was furthest thing from our mind. When we first started looking at a home, we were just at a point, we were ready to settle down. And after we'd found this lot, it had a beautiful southern exposure, and Doug had read a few things about a few solar homes in the country, and he thought, well, wouldn't it be neat if we would just set up our house so that we could convert to solar energy somewhere down the line? And I thought, oh, he's really crazy, you know, what is this far out technology? You know, because that was 6 years ago when we started thinking about it. But he convinced me that it really wouldn't be anything that different. And we talked to our builder, and he agreed. And so all it really involved was we sliced off this cube shape of our house on the southern edge of it at a 60-degree angle. And put it at 60 degrees because we, in Portland, we're at 45 degrees latitude. And you take the latitude plus 15 degrees, and you get the proper angle for year-round space heating. Okay, you take your latitude, and in Portland it's 45 degrees north, and you add 15 degrees to that to get the angle. There, he's got a 60-degree angle. For maximum benefit for year-round space heating. Now there's different angles if you want different applications, so we'll talk about later, but for year-round space heating, that's the rule of thumb.
Of course, most space heating occurs in the wintertime, so that's
right.
Why it's
right, and the sun and the sun is lower in the wintertime, so that's why it's steeper. And because of that steep angle, we will collect more on a sunny winter day than we will on a sunny summer day, because the sun is more direct on those collectors in the wintertime. But see, that's when you need the heat anyway, is the wintertime. Okay, so anyway, we built the house. We, you know, had this roof cut off like that at really no extra cost at all. I think it was $15 extra, the builder said. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Well, that was because we had a pipe put in to run down.
Added.
So that we'd be all set. Oh, and they also put in a little extra rebar in the basement area down here below. Rebar to reinforce the concrete in the basement there, because we had thought that would be our storage area. Okay, so there we were sitting there, ready to go and with no more money. And
waiting for a few years to roll by.
Yeah, and Doug was going to build his own collectors. In fact, we had invested in some recycled window glass that had been taken out of the building that was being torn down, and he was going to build his own collectors.
In the meantime, what did you do with that funny angle on your house?
We put on a tar roof, or not a tar roof, but asphalt roof.
Composition roof, just the ugliest thing since, you know, whatever. And knew that it was eventually going to be covered up. Had faith that it would eventually be covered.
Well, then in Oregon, for those of you who remember politics, ballot measure 9 came up, which really scared the utility company, and they realized that they had all their eggs in the nuclear basket and they wanted to get involved in solar. And so Portland General Electric Company approached us, and we were...
I wasn't working for them at
the
time.
No, Doug was working at Bonneville Power at the time. They approached us, and we were really critical of them, and we thought, you know, what would they want to be doing in solar energy? And we were not really sure at all what their motives were, and what, you know, whether they felt that, you know, we'd just be their,
right,
their token experiment in solar energy or what. But what they wanted to do was install a solar heating system on our home and monitor it and be able to use it to demonstrate to the public how the system works, and also to instrument it and monitor it over a 3-year period. And I don't know, they wined us and dined us enough probably we finally
summer.
Gave in.
Summer.
Oh, excuse me, yes,
it's 4:56.
Oh,
all right. 26, will, I thought it was 26.
My watch is a minute fast. I was going to mention
they're blowing the Alpine horn, so it will make it 4:26 in Holden. That was it.
Okay.
What about, how did they know you were building this house? Was it such a phenomenon?
Well, see, no one in Portland had a solar house. This was a long, you know, 5 years ago.
This is the first one.
And the only other home in Oregon was one on Coos Bay that this really genius guy had built just on his own, and he was kind of our inspiration. We've gone to visit him and had seen how his system worked, and so we had an idea that it really would work.
I had done a little bit of political action.
Some politicking. He had called up a number of places that we had thought might be interested in installing a system on our house, and apparently somebody had filed our name away somewhere because they looked it up again when they were interested in.
Also, I had been doing some political action, so to speak,
right,
giving some testimony
for the
Governor's Energy Advisory Committee about in November of 74, must have been, and there were some PGE people there that heard that, so it gets around, I guess.
Did like the man in suburban Maryland, Washington, D.C., who built his house in the late 1950s and the furnace comes on 4 times a year, did they not study things like that? Or did
well, we studied his papers and wrote for his plans and all
that.
And, you know, we had all these models to go by when we did our house.
And
that was a system that I would have done probably if we would have done our own.
You did do, I don't mean to stop your presentation.
No, that's
you
fine.
Did do all the other things you mentioned, like exposure, windows,
right,
insulation,
right.
Trees.
Yeah.
Trees were, you know.
We already had oak trees on the south
side.
Yeah,
God divided those.
But we planted maple trees on the west side.
Which are still growing.
They grow quicker.
And another thing that a friend of mine did in Michigan that is similar to it's a solar home without the panels. I was glad the way you said that.
We're going to talk.
He did was, in order to get a building permit in this little town, there was a minimum number of square feet. What it was way back to prohibit Chicanos and shacks, so that you had to have a certain size, and he wanted to buy a house and it wasn't big enough. Or he wanted to get a building permit and it wasn't big enough. So he called a porch part of the house and got his permit. And it's all windows with kind of aluminum blinds that are a sun reflector during times of the day. And he can get that thing to 120, open doors, and essentially has a solar house with what other people would call a sun porch. Okay, you're going to have
right.
In Oregon, that's what we
that
eventually,
later.
If we were to build it today,
we would do it different. We would do it without the business on the roof.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Our house is obsolete already, but we thought we'd tell you about it anyway.
Okay. Anyway, We drew up a contract with PGE, and they started work installing the system, and it went to work January 1st, 1976. We started operating. And how it works, you can illustrate while I explain. The collector's on the roof. If we'd known we were doing this, we have a little cross-section of what our collector looks like. It's ours were made by Revere Copper. They're commercially available. It's a copper plate painted black. It has copper tubing on it. Water is pumped up through this copper tubing on the black plate. The black plate has an airspace and then a double pane of glass on top of that. And because this copper is painted black and it's under the glass, it gets very hot in the sun. And as the water is pumped up through it, the water is warmed and takes the heat off the plate, and the warm water goes down to the basement. Oh, you did the heat exchanger too.
Well,
okay,
whatever.
You're going to make it more complicated. Okay. You have to take into account freeze protection. And in our case, we get by that problem because we have two loops of water. The loop that goes through the collectors is an ethylene glycol antifreeze solution. And it goes through this long tube, which is a heat exchanger. Okay, and going through that heat exchanger at the same time is just plain water from the storage tank. And the heat is transferred here from the hot collector water into the storage water, and this tank, storage tank in the basement, gets warmed that way. When the house calls for heat, a pump comes on and pumps water from the storage tank through a coil. It looks just like your car radiator, and a fan in the duct where blows the air across the coil, warms the air, and the air circulates through the house just like any forced air heating system. It's, you know, it's no, it's nothing far out 21st century technology. It's very simple. It's been, this technology has been around for hundreds of years. It has not been economical because our fossil fuel prices have been kept artificially low. This will not supply 100% of our needs. Right now we have, since March, we've had no backup because we've been modifying the system, but we will.
Well, we don't normally have a backup since then anyway.
But,
what do you mean by that?
Turn off the electric backup system about mid-March.
And we manually crank it back on
in late October. Right.
And
our backup,
the way PGE installed it, was another tank that was heated by an electric boiler, and it had its own coil. Downstream from this one.
I see.
Okay.
Do you get your hot water from the tank too?
Yes. Do you want to try another little?
No, I don't.
PG didn't want to do that either, so we did that on our own. We sold this tank, and it's just another little. We have our electric hot water tank, and then this other tank with the coil that takes water.
You have to boost the temperature of your water.
Right.
Only when it's not hot enough to meet the set temperature in the electric tank. Now, between about mid-May and mid-October, it's always above 120 degrees. So the meter just kind of sits there dead all summer long, and our bills are cut in half.
That 120 is in that holding tank?
In the main tanks, and also in the preheat tank. For the domestic water.
Yeah, this will be about the same temperature.
And people's question about cloudy days from whatever you said, May to October in Portland, whether it's a bright day or not, you've got that kind of heat.
Because we've got storage.
Yeah, right.
And between...
Between October
And March, we are 60% solar heated, because that's the heating season. Okay, October, no, I shouldn't say that. October and April, probably. And that's what we call the cloudy season, and yet we still get two-thirds. And there are other approaches we'll talk about in a minute that are...
How much is your storage? How many gallons?
Too much.
Well, 3,700 right now.
Should be about 2,500.
We had 5,000 gallons, but we took out one tank.
How big a size is that for us to talk about?
Well, it is
1,200.
We have
go ahead.
Five. There are five or less tanks, 6 feet wide, 6 feet across, and we have three of them.
PGE put in four of them. We took out one.
We
this
just
summer.
Took out one this summer.
We've modified the system completely from what
our
they
contract
had.
Expired this spring, and so we've changed it all around.
Because it was turning out.
What type
out,
of a deal did they give you when they put it in?
Gave it to us.
They gave it to us.
Okay.
It was ours as of what, May 1st?
March 1st.
March 1st.
But we've took that opportunity to, we actually paid about $50 a month, $50 a year,
extra.
More than what we could have been doing because of the way that they had designed the system. I wish I would have had more of a say in the details. So we shall save another $50 a month, which...
A year.
Good heavens, our annual bill then.
just by what we've
years,
done this
just
summer.
By the simple, and the modifications have to do with taking things out of the system, not putting things into it. The more simple it gets, the more efficient.
Well, also, the simpler you can make it, the easier it is to maintain. You know, if you have 10 pumps, there's more chances of one going wrong than if you just have two pumps, you know.
Have you figured out why they want you to do this? You still work for them, right?
Well,
yes,
I've
worked for
them
for the last 2 years.
Yeah, he didn't work for them when they did this. But they had so many inquiries, and the fellow they had hired to initiate these, they had three projects, ours was one. He was so overwhelmed with work and they had a position open, so Doug essentially wrote his own job description and got the job.
I don't mean to be facetious, but do you assume that they think that one of our options is this with the supplementary heat being electrical, so that they're counting on that? Or I mean, all of the talk you hear is the utility companies do not want solar because you can't put a meter on the sun. I mean, finally, you don't have a utility bill.
In some utilities where they have in the east a lot, they've put in a lot of excess capacity, generating capacity. So they got all these plants they have to pay for. Here in the Northwest, we're short.
I see.
So the more we can hold the loads down and use cheap generation, which happens to be hydro, the more economically the utility can generate to its customers. In the east, where they use fossil fuel, actually nuclear turns out to be cheaper than fossil fuel plants. So they're when they go to nuclear, it's a step for them, the way they interpret it anyway, somewhat cheaper. For us, it costs about 20 times more per unit of energy to manufacture from a coal or nuclear plant than it does off of existing hydroelectric.
Would it be less complicated to do something with air and eliminate the antifreeze?
Well, I could go into a half hour tirade about that, but
that's,
they both have their advantages and disadvantages.
Another system that PGE helped finance uses an air rock system. Their storage tank is a pile of rocks under the house, and their collectors are an air collector. And that works okay too. There's advantages to each.
If you have a leak in an air system, you lose efficiency.
And you won't find a leak.
Incredibly, but you don't find the, and you can't find the leak. At least in a water system, you know when it's leaking.
And you can find it.
Yeah,
and you can
because
find
it drips. An air system, you don't know where the air is going, but that's one of the biggest problems in air systems is poorly sealed storage, ductwork, and you lose efficiency.
Okay, we've got to move a little quicker. Explain how it works. Now, Doug wanted me to say a little bit, what is it like living in a solar home? What is the impact on our daily lives? Basically, nothing. You just set your thermostat, you know, just like in a regular house, you put it on what temperature you want, and it'll all be automatically taken care of. You know, you turn it down at night, turn it up in the day. You can just forget about it.
What do you keep your house?
We keep ours at, well, with babies now, we keep it at 68 during the day and 60 at night.
Allow it to drop to 60 at night, but only, if it's, only if it's freezing all night long.
Sometimes we'll leave it at 65 day and night because we have trouble warming up in the morning
with
this system in the wintertime.
With low temperature storage, it turns out much more efficiently if you can. You can use it more efficiently if you can heat it 65 all day. It's all free, but you want to try and you can extract it better at lower temperatures. You know?
Okay, but it has made us more conscious of the weather. Obviously, you know, if we've had 2 weeks of clouds and no sun, we get a little nervous, and we know that we're, you know, using more electricity at that point than we are solar. And I kind of subconsciously plan activities around the weather because I know that our hot water is solar heated. I will do wash on days that it's sunny and run the dishwasher during the daytime instead of after supper, you know.
Or
early in the morning. And that sort of thing, you know, if it's convenient. If it's not convenient to do it at those times, like if it's the day I'm working and it's sunny, I'm not going to stay home from work just to do it, just to save energy. You know, there comes a point where you can't let it run. You know, you still are in control of your lifestyle. And you can do what you want. We have suffered some loss of privacy due to this demonstration project. As I don't know if any of you from the Portland area are aware, it's well, PGE has this extensive instrumentation system where every 20 minutes 30 data points are being recorded on this recording device in our basement. So once a month they send a guy out to change the tape, so that's once a month we get a visit. They figured out that just in last year we had 2,000 people come through this heating system and have it explained. And we figure in the last 3 years that the demonstration has been going on, how many?
6,000.
6,000 people had come through. Just
what did it cost you, though, to put that in?
It didn't cost us anything.
No, what did it do?
All right, which approach are you going to use? My approach or their approach?
You want to know how much PGE spent on it?
No.
They spent $30,000.
Okay?
We would not have spent anywhere near that amount.
Well, our budget for that, we could still do it for about $5,000, building our own. And PGE was even surprised to them because they had planned on spending $10,000 at the beginning.
But they
gave you $50 per person is what they gave you for what they spent.
You mean for people, for the
you could look at
visitors.
It that way. But
$5.
Yeah.
$5.
Well, they gave hired union labor to do the installation.
$5.
Gave them a time and materials contract, and they kind of ran away with it, the contractor did, so it ended up being quite expensive. Doug's going to talk about some alternative ways. Well, also, you know, radio and TV stations and magazines and a lot of people like that bothered us the first couple of years. Now we haven't had that much exposure, except like on Sunday every year we get some publicity. Yeah.
I was wondering when they take people through.
Remember, I work for the company and I'm the tour guide.
When you take people through, what price do you quote a price to them or anything like that?
Well, we
tell them that they spent $30,000 on this.
If they ask, I want to give them a realistic feeling when they leave of what it would cost them if they were to do approximately the same thing as what we've done. I don't recommend to them that they do what we've done. See, that's the difference that we'll get into in a minute. But
if we'd build it again, we would do it differently. But just the changes since our contract expired with them and they signed the system over to us this spring, you know, with those changes, had they installed it that way, it would have brought the cost way down.
Did they not build one up at the Rose Garden, the Portland Park?
That was Pacific Power and Light Company.
When was that built and what's
that
the
was 77. Well, they said Pacific Power and Light said that it was going to be finished in sometime before ours, I remember, and it got finished about a year after ours. But they spent 10 times as much. on the house and the system, the whole thing.
$30,000. $300,000 on that house.
Now you see, our house was cost us $35,000 to build the house, and it's $30,000 for PG&E to put the system in. So even total, it was only $60,000.
And ours is a livable house. The one that that other utility built is...
is a laboratory.
Is a laboratory. It's
which
not
is half the size.
Okay. Would it be cheaper to put in a gas auxiliary heater than electric?
Yeah, it would have. But yeah. See, the utility wouldn't have probably wouldn't have picked us unless, you know, we had electric.
Well, they couldn't justify, you know, saving someone gas. There's nothing I'd like to say about lifestyle, about, you know, we live in a comfortable suburban home. We both have jobs in the city. And yet, in looking at total energy use, including transportation, we're able to use about 25% total energy of what a family of our, what was it, Oregon figures, a family of our income should use, simply by solar water heating, space heating, approximately 50% system, and by my taking the bus to work every day. That's using, that's saving 75% of the energy that a family of our size and income should. No lifestyle change. We're living, we have a dishwasher, I mean, we have all the amenities, maybe I shouldn't mention that or brag about it, but the idea is that we always think of great self-sacrifices for energy savings, which, you know, obviously we're going to have to, if I were doing it, you know, we obviously would have to have shifted $5,000 of our money from something else into an energy system. Well, that's a choice that we have. That a large portion of our society has.
Does Portland have the bus system so a lot of people have that option and don't take it, or is it?
The ridership is always growing, but, you know, there's always traffic jams into the city. I mean, there's, what is it? There's a little ad on Portland radio that says some guy from Oregon is talking with some guy from New York, and they're comparing pollution and stuff like that. Turns out there's more cars that drive into the city of Portland commuting than drive into the city of New York. You know, talking about pollution.
Did you ever drive into New York?
Yeah.
We took the train when we were there. Well, let's move on to some things. Working for the utility and being a solar energy consultant serving customers, my goal has been to outline and research all the different economical ways that we can use solar energy for our homes. I'm convinced that people don't care one bit about the uneconomical ways of using solar energy, and yet that's what we hear about in a lot of cases. So, in reading and researching and people obviously doing different approaches to solar energy around Oregon, there are many options, just a range of options from, you know, all the way from the cheapest. I say the cost of a solar heating system is somewhere around the cost of a car. Okay, you can get a 10-year-old clunker for $250, or if you can get a brand new Super Duper or whatever for $30,000, and both of them will get you to the store and back. And that's what we're talking about doing, is getting to the store and back. So, the low cost solar options. Passive solar heating is the main idea. Passive solar heating means using the structure itself as a solar collector. We're not adding anything to the roof or anything to the structure. We're just saying, let's face the house the right direction, like Emily was mentioning earlier. Put all the glass on the south side, limit, you know, insulate well, all that kind of thing. But what we have to do with a passive solar heating system, passive is a word that means that the house doesn't have to do anything to collect that solar energy. It just sits there and does what a house should do rather than forcing a house to do what it should do, which is what we all try and do now. We slam in any kind of house anywhere and throw in a heating system to try and make up the difference. The way to some concepts in passive solar heating systems, one's called a direct gain system. This is where you have a large south glass area and some kind of massive storage materials like brick or rocks or concrete, which form the floor or the back wall or a partition wall in the structure. The idea is that 2/3 of the energy we need for heating occurs at night. That heat need occurs at night. We've got to store it up somehow. So by allowing the sun to come through those windows, I shouldn't use the word sun. I should use the word solar radiation, because even on cloudy days you get solar radiation. Comes down, warms up this mass that we've got to store up that heat, and in the evening time it radiates that heat slowly into the structure.
You mean like it's a wall?
Mm-hmm. It's a wall.
It could be right in front of the windows or set back.
Well, now, if we're talking about defining the three different types of passive solar heating systems, the direct gain is the one that uses the floor or the back wall. What we're using here is just windows or a wall that we would have had there anyway, a floor we would have had there anyway, and a back wall we would have had there anyway. We've probably added to the cost because of using materials other than wood, which is commonly used around here. Some places in California, they use slab floors as a matter of course. So you may not be paying much extra for anything.
There's still a livable area, and it's not taken away from living space.
No, this is all living space. The people live in the collector.
And it's not too hot on a sunny afternoon. Like if it's the floor, you don't get into it.
Because you have mass absorbing the heat during the daytime, your space actually stays cooler when it is sunny. If you're sitting in front of the window, it's going to feel like you're sitting in front of a window.
Why is that? Slab, or can there be a carpet on?
I'm sorry, no carpet.
Throw rugs. It's a brick or a stone floor.
Right. Can be decorative. You know, something like this is nice. Or it could be some people use a brick fireplace in the middle, make the middle wall of the house an extended brick fireplace, and the sun comes in and shines on that. Well, that's a direct gain system. The second type is the thermal storage wall, which is where we put this concrete wall or water wall. It's not a wall made out of water. It's containers of water which go from floor to ceiling, which the sun shines in on these. And these are put right behind the windows, right behind the south window wall. Sun shines in on that, and these absorb the heat and then slowly radiate. We're not talking about mechanical systems or pumps or anything that can go wrong.
What's the principle that allows it to radiate? It only radiates when the air gets cooler than the storage, is it?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The storage will, it'll vary temperature all over the map, but...
Some kind of a physical principle. Mm-hmm.
Right. Talking about just heat transfer and heat storage capability.
In this system, you'd have an insulator between the window and that wall, so you could block that wall off completely if you didn't want any
block
radiation
the glass area off
to get to it, you know, if you were afraid you'd overheat. Or also at nighttime, in the wintertime especially, you would close this area off so it would not radiate back out the window again, so it would go into the heat.
In fact, those insulating curtains are available to anybody, you know, whether it's a solar home or not. There are curtains on the market that will give you an insulating value equal to that of an insulated wall. Something which windows will lose about, double glass even loses about 8 times more energy than an insulated wall.
So, and a curtain that you pull will be the same as an insulated wall?
It's a tight fitting.
They're called curtain walls. They have R values, if you like R values, between R10 and R15. And an insulated wall is about R11 in our neck of the woods. The third passive approach is greenhouse, just an attached greenhouse, which is what you were mentioning earlier, or a sun space, or a solarium, or whatever you want to call them. They qualify for the Oregon State Solar Tax Credit because they are a solar collector. So that's the third approach and is the most available to people in existing homes. You add a greenhouse, get the tax credit, and you can, like one in our system that PG's been monitoring, provides about 30% of the heating requirements of the home by adding a greenhouse. And you can do other things with greenhouses too, like
and
live there.
What do they do? Does the air from the greenhouse get piped in way into the house? Or?
You can have just openable windows on that side, or you got to have some kind of storage too. Some people put water drums in there. Other people have the brick wall or the concrete wall between the living space and the greenhouse. And that serves as the storage.
Is it possible then, are people living in greenhouses? Because I've always wanted to do that.
Well, there's one home in New Mexico. Not
it's
so funny.
Beautiful.
That is really nice. It isn't really, greenhouses pretty much you have to isolate from the actual living area. Because they will vary much more widely than the house which they are serving. Okay.
Their temperature.
And temperature. But in New Mexico, there's a good example. Friends of ours. So passive is the most economical approach because we're using a structure. Obviously, and this is what we're pushing as a utility and what I'm pushing individually, things which people, just by awareness, they can take advantage of. We're not
talking about being able to convert existing housing mm-hmm. to RAs.
And also the possibility of existing housing, right? Also, we can use like domestic hot water systems, just small collector systems for, those are the two approaches that would be for existing homes. And then working our way up to the more expensive approaches, this is called an active system, by the way, because it uses electricity to run it, the pumps and fans. A do-it-yourself active system, building your own collectors, and putting in your own storage, all your own labor, actually can turn out to be cheaper than a passive system. So here's what you've got. You've got do-it-yourself active systems, passive systems, commercially installed active systems. And you've got a range from day to night, and yet what we hear on radio and TV and newspaper and whoever else is that solar has to be something expensive, or it has to be exotic, or it has to do all kinds of weird things to your home. And one of my objectives is to dispel that and to show that, you know, from where we come from, in terms of our faith, that people need to be made aware of that so they can take some action on controlling that kind of that part of their lives. So I know we've gone through it kind of fast, but
if you have questions,
do you provide like plans for people as part of your job? Or
I am getting finally some passive solar house plans that that people could use.
This is our house.
We have only four of these handouts that you can glance at, you can look at, or and the four of you that are left at the end can take them of our house. But I will have some house plans.
That was just two. Were there four? Were there two?
Yeah,
okay.
There's two.
Okay.
And there's a wide range of services that we provide if you live in the Portland area. Yes.
What kind of plan would you use here?
I'd like a Traum wall system. Or a thermal storage wall system, sometimes called a Traum wall.
And when you put the wall right behind the south windows.
And you can always cut windows out of it, so it's not like having a black wall sitting.
That's what I was wondering, how do you get sun in here?
You just
have a glass.
You cut windows.
Oh, you can put windows, you know, on the sides of it or the top.
Cut windows on a concrete wall. Make it twice as more insulated. Now that reduces our heat needs by another third, you see.
Yeah, we'd insulate twice as much.
Right. You wouldn't go underground with any part of it.
We may, Birmingham on the north, that's a possibility.
You have to have the right lot.
Yeah, there's a limitation there.
I still don't understand about this wall and the ceiling.
All right, I bet you that after this fire dies down this evening, that those rocks are still going to be warm. And it works exactly the same way with solar heat. We have a radiative heat source.
The wall is the south wall of your house.
Right.
And the sun will strike this surface directly.
But you were going to do something.
Glass in front of it.
Right?
Yeah, we were going to build the wall right behind the glass.
It'd be the same as if this wall here, say that sun, was all glass, came through here and hit this fireplace and warmed up all these rocks. That wall over there was rock wall, came in through and hit that. At nighttime, you pulled your drapes and you had your heat sitting with you.
Right.
Radiant fireplace heat source, so it's whatever. Yes.
Is there much being done in research for, storing cells? I remember I heard today.
You mean electricity or heat?
Electricity.
Well, if 80% of our needs for energy in the home are for heat, why do we want to go through the process of converting something into electricity and then turning it back into heat again? If only 20% of our needs.
Put a meter on.
Well, that's no big deal for us out here. We'd like to see it. You know, you get state and federal tax credits. But only 20% is what you need for electricity, and that's more expensive right now. I mean, we're talking about solar cells or wind generation or something like that.
Well, just to give you an idea how much more expensive, we figured out that to get as much energy from the solar cells as we do from our heating system, it would cost $500,000.
And take up a roof four times the size, because they're less efficient.
No, so it's just not a practical way right now.
If you built your original system for $5,000, how many years would it take to pay off that system?
For $5,000?
Yeah.
Depends how much you pay for your energy.
Well, he's asking us specifically. probably 15.
15.
But you see, that was only one consideration. Yeah. You know, a lot of people spend money in things that pay them, that take them infinity to pay. Think about your second car, for instance, if you live in suburbia. In most cases, a second car is a negative influence on your, I mean, payback time is infinity. You pay to buy the car, you pay to operate the car, you pay to gas the car up. At least if you spend that $5,000 in solar, it's paying you something back.
Well,
and most, 99% of our purchases have I'd say infinity payback time, because we don't buy them for paybacks.
We heard that the utility companies brought up 300 patents on solar stuff to prevent Americans from going solar. You're saying this would be East Coast companies and not...
If it was...
Well, if it was, I don't know. You know, that's not the sense that I get from our corporate officers.
This was a debate between an environmentalist from Montclair State College in New Jersey and somebody representing a nuclear or a utility company on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a government report. The utility company guy called him everything in the book except refute the stuff he was arguing about. So
many solar things are unpatentable because they're so straightforward that there's always going to be a way to get around it, even if the utility companies were to be that way. There's a lot of disagreements I have personally and morally with what utility companies do. So,
do you know anything about the guy in Minnesota who built his own and the collectors were aluminum beer cans and he stayed warm in 65 degree below weather? Do you know what kind of system it was or anything? It's just all...
I don't know, but I'd submit that he had a wood stove going at the same time. No, that's... He could have... No, I've heard about that, and I... There's all kinds of different things that people use, but in thinking about how that collector worked, he could have done it with a lot less beer cans, or could have used his beer cans more efficiently another way. He used the round cans side by side, I think.
Painted them black. Yeah, I saw that.
You all paint them. Always you paint them black, yes. Yeah. But there's 50,000 solar...
Excuse me, I thought you were finished.
There are 50,000 solar homes, and they're all different in this country.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Ours is just one of them.
Do you think it would be possible to get some sort of device that could run cars on solar energy? Well, what we said, you know, the sun, the way we utilize it, we use the heat, you know, unless you can run your car on heat.
Well, there are ways indirectly. You could.
If you want to convert it, you have to convert it to electricity and then have an electric motor in your car or something.
Or you could convert to electricity, take electricity from solar cells, convert that to hydrogen gas, and fuel your car with hydrogen.
There's a car that's been driving across the country three times now. I think I haven't stopped at a gas station yet, but it's got this incredible big panel on the roof. I don't know, you probably can't go more than 25 miles an hour.
And only during the day.
Well, there's some lifestyle changes we might consider.
Yeah.